I feel like I'm about to give a sermon. Thank you very much for your kind invitation to speak here this evening. I'd like to commend the Centre for Constitutional Rights and SNAP for their sterling work and their advocacy and their commitment. It's very encouraging and it's very necessary and it's very right. And who would have thought in those dark places that we'd end up tonight here expressing ourselves without the kind of fear that we've carried all our lives. So I want to commend them and congratulate them. I'd also like to welcome you all here tonight. And I'd like to state at the outset that this is a very safe place to be here tonight. This is probably one of the most safest places in the world in this room here tonight, with good people. So I'll start off with a couple of things. My name is Mannix. I was born Gerard, so you can call me Mannix or Gerard. I'm 53 years of age. I'm an artist by profession and I'm a politician in Ireland, recently elected to the Dublin City Council. And first of all, I'm here not because of what happened to me or for what happened to other people. I'm here because of what didn't happen as a result of what happened to me and other people. What didn't happen? In the normal chain of events, what happened to me and other people would have been seriously examined in any jurisdiction as a major criminal offence, and the whole rigours of the law would have been employed to find the truth and to bring the perpetrators to justice. That didn't happen. And the reason why that didn't happen was very simple. Is that the individuals who perpetrated rape, torture, and cruel and inhumane treatment on myself and thousands, if not tens of thousands, of other children in Ireland were members of institutions. They were elite members. They were protected by those institutions. They were members of the state, and they were members of global churches like the Catholic churches, and they held extreme power. It's also important to know that in their acts against those as children, in my case, we were all institutionalized in what was known as the Irish institutions, which were the residential institutions, industrial schools, reform schools, Magdalen laundries. Having been placed in those institutions as children, we were criminalized. So we were further demonized. So we were criminal at the age of 7. So all our lives, in order to try and get across our stories or tell our truths, nobody believed us because we were criminalised, etc. It's important to know that in Ireland at the moment, while we do have a rigorous examination in terms of tribunals, the Ryan, the Murphy, the Klein, the Ferns, and the various reports that are coming out, and we've had outcry, it is important to know that no significant individuals, no bishops and no major priests, there hasn't been any raids by An Garda Síochána, which is our police force, on the offices of the churches where who hold the records. So no significant charges, no significant outcry within the church. And while the reports are shocking in what they report, it's important to note also that those reports are only a reflection of the kind of documents that the state held in its care anyway. And those documents would have been coming into the public domain under international law, under the Freedom of Information Act. So you could say that the Ryan reports, the Murphy reports, and the Klein reports, and all these reports, are merely another form of peculiar kind of whitewash and othering. It's also extremely important to remember this much. It would be a grave error to allow the Nazis to examine themselves or to bring themselves to justice. Outside bodies had to do that. It is extremely important that the Irish state and the Irish church be not encouraged to investigate themselves. It's extremely important that this case against the Pope and the Vatican, which is going towards The Hague, establishes once and for all that what we need here is an international body of individuals who are independent, who are free from any interference, to go and investigate this matter on a global basis, with particular reference to Ireland. I would say with particular reference to Ireland, because if you look at the record globally, it's very obvious that the vast amount of offenders when it comes to the Catholic Church and Catholic schools were Catholic priests and nuns and brothers who came from Ireland or came from Irish institutions or Irish organisations like the Sisters of Mercy, the Christian Brothers, etc. They all emanated within there. So there's a disproportionate number of those who are coming from Ireland, coming into the mission work and coming into services in the US, UK, Canada, etc. came out of Ireland. So what we have at the moment in Ireland is that we have a horrendous scandal, a criminal act, a situation which has undermined the Catholic Church. And when I mean it's undermined the Catholic Church, it goes as follows. A lot of people now in Ireland are not going to confession, but they're still going to Mass. No significant number of Catholic churches has closed. And then the flock hasn't particularly dwindled. What's dwindled is the take. The money has dwindled. It's also important to note that the Catholic Church to date in Ireland has not accepted any liability whatsoever for the tens of thousands of children that are abused in residential institutions. When it gave a contribution to the Redress Board, it merely gave a charitable contribution. It did not accept any liability. It's extremely important to remember also that at the outset of any of these investigations into the church or into the Irish state who incarcerated the women and the children, there was an indemnity deal done. So it would be a bit like, you know, again, going to the Nazis and saying to them, listen, we're going to indemnify you from any actions and we're going to indemnify ourselves. So this is what they did. They really are smart, they're really clever, they're sophisticated, and they don't regard civil society as anything, you know, particular to worry about. Children and women, the poor and those who they believe they can get away with abusing, they will. There does not seem to be any court in the world or any jurisdiction court in the states as we know them who are willing to stand up and actually take on these individuals in a proper manner. The only cases that have been prosecuted in Ireland successfully are the ones in where the Christian brothers or priests have actually pleaded guilty. That's very important to know that. In terms of the advocacy groups in Ireland, you know, again, which is an important note to remember, a huge amount of the advocacy groups are supported by the church and are supported by the state. The state and the church in Ireland are one and the same. So there's a danger within there. One is always having to go down the road of utter independence. So that's the kind of background of the issue as it stands in Ireland. What's important also in Ireland is, in terms of the tens of thousands of children who went to the institutions, and remember, these children were locked into institutions, they were far away from home, they weren't in your normal school, so they were at the hand of what was basically, you know, camp commanders. The Christian Brothers, the nuns, could do what they liked with these children. The graveyards in most of these institutions are full to the brim with children's bodies. In some instances, we don't know who those children are, where they came out of, what they died of, or the cause of death. And in some instances, in the Magdalene Nunneries, we do not know the names of those individuals. So here's the Catholic Church. The first thing, as it says in the King James Bible, you shall know me by my name. Call me by my name, and I'll be known as a Christian. These women in the graveyards of the Magdalene Nunneries had no names. Had no names. And when they were dug up 5 years ago, because the grounds were being sold for redevelopment for apartments, they were put into boxes, six and seven into boxes, and driven across the far side of the city and burnt. The remains were scattered as ashes. Still no names. The police force in Ireland, the Department of the Environment, and the nuns and the undertakers and all the state agencies are involved in the exhuming of anybody, and none of them dared to ask, who are these women? Who were these women that were in this convent, in this Magdalene Nunnery, who had no name? So they lied there, and the people who would look for them will never know who they are. It's also important to know that there is no statistics in Ireland of how many people with disability, that is intellectual disability, physical disability, went through those systems. None. It's important to know at this moment that in relation to institutions in Ireland, particularly those that are dealing with intellectual disability and physical disability, there is no inspectorate. The simple facts are these, is that from the foundation of the Irish state in 1922, when England was getting a bit of enlightenment in relation to the incarceration of children, Ireland was going the opposite way, and we actually began to build more industrial and reform schools and began to lock more and more children up. There were more children in Ireland locked up in that time than there was globally. There were thousands of children locked up. The reason being was, is that there was vast amounts of land acquired by the Catholic Church and they needed young children to work this land. So that's what they did. They used these children as slave labour. Well, were there as slave labour, they were sexually exploited and they were physically beaten, etc., etc., etc. To go on about any one given individual case, in my own situation, I was in probably incarcerated from a very early age, from 1963, which is when I was about 4 or 5, I went to my first institution. I came out of the institutions when I was about 19 years of age, and I tried to fit my way into my world and into my person and who I was. I have fought over 40 odd years to get some measure of the truth brought out. My experience was very simple. Nobody believed us. Nobody wanted to know. Nobody cared. The middle classes weren't interested in it, and the working classes, which I'm from, saw it, something not to be talked about. In Ireland, anyway, the act of sexuality is not something that we talk about readily, because the whole place is like a church. It's completely and absolutely agency captured by the Catholic Church and its agents and servants. So it's completely closed down. To discuss child rape, child sex assault, sexual abuse in this day and age in Ireland is still a rather difficult thing to do because it hasn't really been looked at. And to say that it hasn't been looked at in Ireland, I would say the same thing globally. There isn't any evidence that I can find that the sex attack, child sex abuse, paedophilia, and the phenomenon now that's coming out of the Catholic Church in relation to faith-based abuses is not being dealt with at all. We are not discussing the issue. Society is burying its head into the sand and are uttering the issue. Everybody thinks for some strange reason that if they send Johnny and Mary off to school, they're safe. They're not safe. They're not safe at all. And that's what people need to understand. These issues, which are supposed to be historical, are not historical. There's no such thing as an elderly paedophile who won't offend again. Who's to say that? They haven't been vetted. They haven't been brought before courts. And as I say, recently we had the return of Father Oliver O'Grady to Ireland. Now, Father Oliver O'Grady is wandering around the streets of Dublin, and he's a serial paedophile offender who left this country in having served their lengthy sentence. Father Oliver O'Grady has no intentions whatsoever. Well, he's not a priest anymore, but I call him Father Oliver O'Grady has no intentions whatsoever of giving up his acts. I'm not suggesting for a moment that there isn't, some manner or means in which we can curtail these individuals. But the point of what I'm here for is that it's about accountability. And when the church brought Father Oliver O'Grady back to Ireland, they simply threw him back onto the streets of Dublin and had nothing whatsoever got to do with him. So we have Father Oliver O'Grady walking around, but Father Oliver O'Grady is only one of hundreds. One of absolute hundreds. It's really interesting, but there was a prison in Ireland which was in Port, it was in the Curra camp, and they actually used to call it the Vatican, because everybody that was in that particular jail was a cleric or a priest or a religious, and most of them were in for sexual offences. So the issues are here, is that on a global scale, we are looking at an enormous, massive issue of child sexual abuse within the Catholic Church. Unprecedented. And it's only unprecedented in the fact that it's come to light now. There is no research. There is no police force internationally working to work with actually gathering in the information on the trafficking of these paedophiles by the Catholic Church and by the bishops. There's no accountability. There doesn't seem to be a mechanism that the police authorities at borders can stop these individuals and say, you can't come into our country because you actually have an allegation of child sexual abuse against you. This doesn't seem to happen. It seems to me that if you're an ordinary individual and you commit a crime, you'll see the electric chair. But if you put a collar on yourself or you're part of a religious organisation or you're part of some respected institution, you're given another kind of a law altogether that doesn't seem to apply to the rest of us. As a person, who has, not only survived and experienced these abuses, but also I would see myself as in a full recovered position in my life. I have written about the issue, I have performed plays about the issue, and I believe that the issue is one of grave concern, and I believe the one is of enormous political significance. I think it's extremely important that I do not believe that the system out there has the system to deal with this particular issue. There are far too many people in the system who are embedded in the system and are conditioned by the system. It was extremely difficult in Ireland to get the police forces to investigate priests, bishops, nuns and brothers. It was extremely difficult, having gone and spoken with them, to get them to understand what had actually happened, because they had removed themselves entirely from us. They had removed themselves from us. There was nothing but the greater glory of God, and we did not matter. We did not matter. Their lives did not matter. And the idea that, like, you know, the rape of a child was merely a moral failing was preposterous. The unfortunate situation is that we are not seeing a significant number of middle-class families or individuals coming forward with the information. Because perhaps through their education and perhaps through their family support, they're able to absorb this abuse into their lives or use it in their sexual histories. I don't particularly know. But I know that for those who are vulnerable, who are coming from a working-class background, it is much more difficult because the supports aren't there. What's really important now, and what I do see happening, and which I'd love to see, is that this movement, you know, for accountability, for responsibility with regards our childhoods. And your childhood is not something that stops in your childhood, as we all know. Your childhood is something you carry with you all through your life, and that's what you mirror your life through. It's our duty to ensure that proper legislation, proper guidelines, proper boundaries, proper accountabilities, and proper justice systems are put in place. It's extremely important that in relation to the statute of limitations, and it was spoken here earlier on, that the average individual who's coming to report a crime that was committed against them in their childhood is about 40 odd years of age. It's extremely important that these crimes are acknowledged and that they are investigated and that they're not statute barred. It's extremely important that the law step up to the plate here and that the law acknowledges that it is out of step with this phenomenon that's happening, particularly with regards to the issues regarding the Catholic Church. There is this situation that is embedded and conditioned into people, that for some strange reason, that a child that got raped and tortured and beaten to an inch of its life in a Catholic institution was much better off it happening in there with people who cared about him than it happening on the streets in New York or on the streets of Dublin. This was the thinking that was going on with people, that really they were trying their best, that they were really, really trying. And because it was a priest, because it was somebody in an institution, it wasn't really a crime. On one radio program that I happened to hear, the person who was holding on, who was doing the program, was simply saying that when he was asking about abuses, wanted to know, was it tender? You know, you think, where is this person's head from? My time has come up. There's a lot more things that I would have liked to say. But I will say this much. We are merely at the beginning of the very beginning of a very icy, glorious, liberating journey. I see this issue a global issue. I see this issue an international issue. I see this issue a historical issue going back over 100 odd years. I know people who are in their 90s who were abused. And I also see this advocacy with the Center of Constitutional Rights and SNAP growing into a strong international organization fit for purpose for 21st century global world. Thank you very much.